Good Saturday morning to you, and welcome to the Sleep Show, along with Dr. Bethany Brenner. I'm Gary Byron. You can, of course, find her online at theburlingtondentist.com, theburlingtondentist.com, and at 860-673-7155. Again, 860-673-7155. By the way, I will report. Actually, you know what I'm going to do? I want to repeat all of those points of contact at least two more times before the show is over. Good morning. Great to see you, Doc.
Good morning to you.
Where is your office specifically?
I'm right at the intersection of Route 4 and Route 69 in Burlington.
Very well. I meant to ask you that last week. And boy, I got to tell you, last week's show, you hit it out of the park. It was so intriguing. The time flew right by, and I'm like, oh, I can't wait till next weekend because there's so many other questions that I have, and I want to get into that in a moment. How was your week, first and foremost?
Well, it's always busy. Always good.
I'll bet.
Yeah.
What happens if somebody, I shouldn't say what if, I'm sure this happens all the time, when someone needs a dentist on the weekend? You can't control when you have issues. Like, oh, my brother, I just bit into something, I broke my tooth. Or, oh my goodness, I mean, is there ways maybe to, is it prescription-based only, like steroids or I don't know, what are they, an antibiotic? What happens if somebody has a tooth emergency on a weekend?
Well, they can always reach me. But, you know, we have an emergency where they can call or they can text. They can get my phone number off the web, which is really easy to do off our website. And some people do call me, and we have a conversation about what's going on. Some things are more alarming just because they, like, I don't know what to do now. And I've had others where I'll meet you at the office in an hour.
Really?
I mean, yeah. So I go up and see these people. I had a gentleman that just got back from a business trip eating dinner, and he bit down and he literally sliced his tooth right in half. And so he was like, oh my God, I'm in agony. And so I go up, and took me an hour or so to fix him up, and he's doing fine.
You're a whole new level of dedication. You know what I noticed last week is the level of passion in your voice. You can't fake that.
I love my job.
I know you do. What's that old saying? If you love what you do for a living, you never work a day of your life.
And I think that's true.
Isn't it?
And I told my children when they were growing up, find something that you absolutely love to do because then you're not going to work anymore.
Do you, and I think I know the answer to this question, are you still as passionate today as you were the day that you entered this profession?
Oh my goodness. I'm even more passionate. Do you know we have such great technology now? I mean, I use a cone beam x-ray, which is a 3D x-ray of your head.
Right? Oh, wow.
So we didn't have that until a few years ago. I got it about 10 years ago. And when you sit down and look at that, and it's like going to Star Wars. Remember the first Star Wars where you saw the rivets as they moved the...
I saw the first Star Wars in the movie theaters in 77.
So. Right. So when you look at 3D, it's like looking at Star Wars. You can manipulate it and move it around, turn it 360. You can look up underneath the chin. You can look down from the head, you know, the top of the head. When you look at these things and you see what you see, you can't see some of this on a two-dimensional picture. So now you know why the physicians use CAT scans. That's the similar thing that they do to see what's going on in your gut, for instance. Okay, so we can see the same thing. We can see the soft tissues. We can see the hard tissues. And there are things that I can see. So I'll give you an example. I had a lady that came in. She's like, you know, this tooth is bothering me. We took an x-ray. Didn't really show anything. And she's like, all right. And I said, well, we could do the cone beam and we'll know more definitively, right? And I hate to go to the more expensive x-ray if I have to, but okay, it's not showing up there. So she said, well, all right, I'll wait till I come in next time. And then she's like, oh no, it's going to be too long. This is really kind of bothering me. And I said, well, then let's do it right now. So we took a cone beam and she had an abscessed tooth. It just was abscessed into her sinuses. It wasn't showing up on a dental x-ray. So, and things like erosion that happens on the inside the bone and tissues, we get this condition where it eats at the root and looks like your tooth is being eaten up by itself, like a baby tooth would be.
Right. Okay.
You know, think about losing a baby tooth. My mother had that happen to her, and she's like, "My perfectly good tooth, tooth." And I said, "You're going to need a root canal on that tooth, Mom. There's no way around it." And so she's like, "Oh, it was my perfect tooth." So we do get these things, and the only time you're going to see that is on a cone beam. You're not going to see that on a regular X-ray.
One more dental question, and then we'll spend the rest of the show on sleep disorders here. Teeth conditions are they hereditary? Is it genetic?
Some things are, but most people have the same basic anatomy and construction of their teeth. Now, environmental issues: how well do you brush your teeth? What is the oral microbiome? So, I'm having this conversation with my brother about his grandson because he's got tonsillitis all the time. This is a really interesting story because you think it's dental, but why aren't the pediatricians picking up on
right.
this? Okay. So my niece is highly allergic to peanuts, and she carries an EpiPen. Okay.
Oh. How old is she?
I think she's in her 30s. So Oliver is 3 years old, and he's got constant tonsillitis, and his nose is always stuffed up, and they have to suck. You know, in three-year-olds, you suck it all because they don't know how to blow their nose. So they have to use a bulb and suck all this mucus out of his nose so he can breathe. But in another half hour, they've got to do it again. Okay, but he's sick and he's on antibiotics all the time. I said to my brother, "Does he eat peanut butter?" And my brother goes, "Well, yeah, you know."
What kid doesn't?
His grandmother makes peanut butter sandwiches because we can't make it over his mother's house.
Because she's allergic to peanuts. Right.
I said, "Get him off the damn peanut butter." He says, "Why? He's not allergic to it." I said, "No, but he is of her tissue, of her blood, and he's going to carry a small allergy to peanuts.
Wow.
Not that he's going to have a full-blown allergic attack, but it's going to affect his lymphatic system. His immune system is sensing the peanut butter. And where do you swallow? Is right past those tonsils. Are his tonsils enlarged?" And my brother goes, "Well, yeah, and he's getting ear problems." I said, "There you go."
Glad I asked. That is fascinating to me.
Well, that's why I do what I do.
Love this.
And then my next toy is my laser because I can also treat the tonsils to get them to shrink down.
Let's stick with this with this topic. Let's look at somebody 5 year old. You know, like pediatrics. Let's stick with this for a moment.
Yeah.
Is it common? Is it right? Should parents be screening such a young child for sleep apnea, let's say?
Well, I believe so because I see enough of these children. So the symptoms are not the same symptoms as they would be for an adult. So for instance, kids get a lot of asthma. That's usually a sleep breathing disorder. Now, they don't have to necessarily have sleep apnea, but they'll get what we call arousals, the disturbances of sleep. And one of the first young men that I saw that I treated when I was first learning how to do all this, I said to his mom when he was 2, he's got a breathing disorder. She goes, "Oh, no, it's just allergies. The pediatrician's sending me to the allergist. Oh, he has a cold today." So for several years, I saw a child who could not breathe through his nose. Okay.
Poor kid.
And he doesn't want to sit in the chair. So remember how kids get, like, at the holidays when after dinner, they get a second wind and they're running around the dining room table chasing each other. Okay.
Yeah. Dessert.
Right. Why are they not? They're more tired, but they've got that quote unquote second wind. Right. That's what happens to these children. They don't get any sleep. The arousals are waking them up and keeping them out of deep sleep. So what do we see happen? A lot of these kids get ADD, ADHD. They get anxiety, depression. They become bullies. We start to see restless, like they're very restless sleepers. So if your child's like not in the same position, the covers are everywhere, they're at the opposite end of the bed, they can't get up in the morning to go to school, right? There's different symptoms with these children. In fact, one of the women that I was treating for her sleep apnea, she said, "Well, what happens to kids?" I said, "Oh, there's a whole list. I have a whole with the pictures and everything." So I handed her the list and she said, "Oh my goodness, this is the kids that I see," because she's a school counselor. She says, "These are the symptoms I see all day long at school."
Holy.
Right. So I said, "We have an opportunity to fix these kids before the age of 7. And a lot of them, the IQ goes up 10 to 15 points. They are more able to focus in school. They don't have the behavior problems at home. So with this young man, he was still bedwetting. Okay? And he is he's in pull-ups all the time. He's going to be 5.5 years old by the time I get to treat him. The school couldn't stand him because he wouldn't sit in his desk. So they wanted her to medicate him. So she took him to the pediatrician who wanted to put him on Ritalin.
Oh, goodness gracious.
He's not even 6 years old yet. I said, you need to test him. Whether they agree to do this or not, you need to pay for it. He had 42 arousals an hour. The kid never slept. Okay? Great kid, great personality, but he was like the whirling dervish in the cartoons. You just see him spinning all over the place, and it's like, hold still, I want to take a picture. No, he wasn't going to hold still. So I said to Mom, we need to get him in an appliance. So I have some appliances that we can use on these children early on. It's used just wear it to bed. The lack of understanding by the pediatricians that these kids need to be checked is concerning for me. But they're so busy when I talk to them, they're so busy trying to give them the vaccines and do their weight. And they only have a few minutes. They never really get to listen to the mom about what's going on. So when we put him in this appliance, he stopped bedwetting within a week. We started sleeping through the night right about the same time because he was also getting her up several times during the night. So we have this changeover. Now I start them on breathing exercises, mm-hmm. where they only can breathe through their nose. They have to get the strength of the muscles around the lips to keep the lips closed, because that was not something he could do. He could not breathe through his nose. So as we start working with that, then I start doing walking, then we start running. And I have used this with people who do like rock climbing, because they get panic attacks halfway up the wall. So I had a young woman who was like, I said, you do not breathe through your mouth when you go for the hike from the car to the, you know, where you're going to rock climb.
I had a trainer once that told me that. All this cardio, breathe through your nose.
Exactly. So they now use lip taping on the Olympic athletes who are training in track and field.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Because you know why? They can run longer. They get less lactic acid buildup.
Okay.
And they are stronger. So it's a quality thing now. So it's all breathing through your nose is really important.
Why do you think pediatricians don't look deeply into sleep apnea?
I just don't think they have the time. That's what they tell me. It's not well understood with children because they have a variety of symptoms. It's not like, oh, we have one or two symptoms and we do it. And it's too expensive to test. These tests run, that's why my ring I have for children is not a difficult thing at all. We can put the ring on their finger, they go to sleep, we get the information. So I think it's just something that they feel that they don't have the time to do. And my guess would be they don't get reimbursed by the medical.
Ah, so it's dollars.
Yeah, maybe.
We were just talking about nasal. Why do you think nasal breathing is so significant, so important?
Oh my gosh. So the nose has over 200 functions. And we don't even understand all of it. We know that if you breathe through the nose, we have the soft palate that drapes down into our throat actually lifts up better. So when you breathe through your mouth, it gets lower, it drops down. So now I'm going to call it your air hole at the back of your throat, gets smaller. The other thing is that when you breathe through your nose, you have a different posture, okay? And so one of the things we look at is posture. So when I look at somebody and I see their head very far forward of their shoulders, because this is a pretty big bowling ball. It weighs a lot, okay, this head. So when your chin is forward of your shoulders, right, you're actually, think about when you do CPR and you lay somebody down, what's the first thing they tell you?
Put their head back.
Chin tilt.
Yeah, I was trained in
okay,
that.
Okay, so, yeah. Right. And what does that do? Opens up the airway.
That's right.
All right, so if you open up your airway, and you're standing, you're looking at the ceiling. The body goes, oh, no, no, you can't run away from the saber-toothed tiger like that. Mm-hmm. We're going to do a torticollis of the cervical spine, and we're going to twist you so one shoulder gets higher than the other, and so you can now see your feet. So you're going to get crooked. When you get crooked, the head comes forward. So I can look at the posture, and I can kind of get an idea. rounded shoulders. We look at the cervical spine. And I don't treat necks and spines, but we can certainly refer them to people who can help us out with that. But as soon as I start repairing the airway on these kids, and then we have to teach them not to be so schlumpy. I remember my grandmother saying, sit up straight at the dining room table, right? Don't eat scrunched over. So we were all like, you know, feeling we had to stand there like at attention while we're eating our food. And then elbows off the table.
Of course.
Remember those days?
Yeah.
So we had all that. We don't say that to our children anymore. We don't insist that they sit up.
No, because we're just as guilty doing it ourselves. Yeah. Why do you think, maybe I'll ask it to you this way. What can a parent do to help children, you know, and actually, what should they be looking for? Maybe that's the better question.
Well, I think some of the things that I just talked about, bedwetting. I had a man who was 30 years old who said, I never did a sleepover because I was bedwetting until I was 19.
Oh, my goodness. This poor guy. Really?
Yeah. Wonderful, wonderful human being. And he was a pottery artist. And so just as we were getting ready to treat him, he said, I just got a new job. I'm going to move out to Colorado. And I'm like, I know people in Colorado that can help you.
There we go.
He's like, thank goodness. And I said, someday when you're famous, just send me a piece of your artwork. Yeah, he's a great guy. But he was so embarrassed. He said, I never did a sleepover because I bedwet every night. Yeah.
Can you imagine? No, I can't. This poor guy. Folks, you are listening to The Sleep Show along with Dr. Bethany Brenner. I'm Gary Byron. You can find her online at the BurlingtonDentist.com office in Burlington as well. Write down this phone number. I don't want you to miss any of the show. So get a few more minutes. Give her a buzz. 860-673-7155. 860-673-7155. Do you know somebody who has a sleeping disorder? Maybe it's you. Do you yourself have a sleeping disorder? Would you even know if you had one? Do people say, oh, you're snoring too much? Or are you, after just a few hours of sleep, are you waking up and you can't figure? See, this is why you got to make yourself an appointment. Why do people get tired when they have sleep apnea?
Well, there's a few reasons for that. Okay. So one is, how well are they breathing while they're sleeping? Right. So we've kind of discussed
some of that.
Exactly. And the other is that their cortisol level rises. Right. Cortisol is like a steroid in the body. And you're thinking, why is that doing that? Well, our adrenals, and there's a term called adrenal fatigue. Right. What is it? Why do we attach fatigue onto that? Is because we've used up all of our resources while we're sleeping. And now we have nothing to cope with the stresses of the day. And we're tired. And we feel like we got to plod one foot in front of the other in order to get through the day. Then we're going for the sugar, the caffeine, the snacks, right? And we want to eat, so people tend to gain weight. But they're tired all the time, and they can't figure out why they got brain fog. They can't figure out why they don't feel like going and working out. They don't have any of those resources anymore. And so one of the things that I do with our patients as well is we start to talk about when this happens and we're transitioning you from bad sleep to better sleep, you're going to go through some of this, and I need you to change what you're eating so that the body can help you and respond and recover. So if some of them are supplements, some of it's how you eat. But yeah, it's a complicated subject because the gut microbiome is what keeps us healthy. And then there's the vagus nerve. And the vagus nerve goes from our brain. It's the longest cranial nerve in the body. It goes down to our heart and all our organs in our stomach. And that affects our mood. And that is one of the things that we want to get you into parasympathetic. I talk about sympathetic versus my patients they all know me now. We're talking sympathetic, parasympathetic all the time.
I've been told I snore.
Oh.
That's normal, right? I've been told it's normal. Most people snore, I've been told.
Well, that's not exactly true. Some people snore. And you get the typical...
Do most people snore?
No.
No.
So here's the thing. You can breathe softly through your mouth, and you're not snoring, and you can still have sleep apnea. But if you snore, we know that now that air hole is fluttering. That's the snore sound, right? But if we get your jaw pulled forward, exactly, we get your jaw pulled forward, which is what the MAD devices were doing, you can't make that sound, all right? But interestingly, we can also make an appliance that gets you into that sweet spot without pulling your jaw so far forward. But it's the snore sound that says to me you're on the verge of having a collapse. Okay, so when you collapse and that creates a sleep apnea, are you snoring white during that process? And the answer is probably. But once again, that's why we do the sleep tests, so we can see.
Should I be alarmed? Should I be really concerned?
It doesn't typically...
It's not keeping me up at night.
It doesn't keep you up at night. It might keep your wife
up
at night. But yeah, so you have to look at this as it's a sign or a symptom, potentially, of sleep apnea. And the other thing is that how good is the quality of your sleep while you're snoring? You think it's great because you're not woken up by it. Hmm. But it's not good for the other person in the same room.
What about jaw clicking or what's that popping? You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. I get a lot of those.
Oh, bet.
All right. So we're talking about there's a cartilage disc between the bone of the jaw and the bone of the skull. When the ligaments get loose, and I call it ligament laxity, it's like when you've sprained your ankle and you can kind of roll that ankle more often because mm-hmm. it's not tight anymore. The rubber band's been too stretched. That's probably what's happening in this same thing because we have ligaments that are attached to this cartilage that pulls it into the correct position. When it's late getting there, it pops or it clicks. And when I look at some of these people and the woman I just saw this week,
it hurt, wouldn't it?
Doesn't always hurt. Uh-huh. And we were told in dental school, and they don't teach this in dental school, and you have to give all these dentists a lot of credit because they're really trying to help people, but they weren't taught this in school. They do not cover this in school. And so what happens is that these people, over time, the ligaments get overstretched and then they get stuck. And then they get locked closed or they get locked open. And if you get locked closed for too long, it fuses in place and now we have to try to stretch scar tissue. And we can do that. It takes a while to do. But people come in. I had a woman that came in. She said, I have to go through the surgery, but I can't open wide enough for them to intubate me. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. TMJ. What does that stand? What is it? What is TMJ?
Temporal mandibular joint.
Okay. All right. So that's the acronym TMJ. What is it? And is it related to sleep apnea?
So I see a lot of people with joint pain, face pain, when they have sleep apnea. So when we check them, and we find that this function that they're doing is they're grinding their teeth all night long, that moves that joint a lot. So we're now overstretching because we go into what we call parafunctional grinding. You stick your jaw in places that you would never do during waking hours. Mm. And they come in and they've chipped a front tooth. And I'm like, okay, slide your jaw forward. We see what you're doing. It's a very interesting event that people, dentists, take for granted that, I'll just fix your front tooth. And then if they whack it off again, it's like, well, I don't know what you're doing. Well, yeah, you're not checking for the parafunctional movement. So oftentimes when I see people who have broken their front teeth and they slide forward, we look and see how those teeth fit together, and it's like a piece of puzzle. They just perfectly fit where they've been grinding those teeth down. And I have people that have literally ground through the back of their teeth so the tooth breaks in the front. It becomes like a thin tooth there because of what they're doing.
And final question, because we got to wrap things up here very short. We got about maybe a minute and a half. Why do most dentists make night guards for TMJ? What does the night guard do?
Well, unfortunately, that's what's taught in dental school. If you're trying to protect the teeth and you think, you're breaking your teeth now because some of the grinding and clenching does that. Well, we're going to disperse the forces. We'll make a splint for you, a night guard. Usually they put them on the top. Some of them are made for the bottom. But it's a one-piece device, right? What I make are two pieces because I need to put you in a better position. Interestingly, the jaw is going to move no matter what you do. So you can't lock them in place. And we have dentists that make a device that locks them in place. And that should never be done. But these night guards, unfortunately, they've done a lot of studies and they show that 50% of them make people worse.
Well, really?
Yeah, they make them worse. I have people that come in and say, here's my night guard, I can't wear it. Or I had one guy that came in with five of them. And he's like, I got all five. Which one is going to be the one? And I tested him with every single one. And I said, none of them work.
So for everybody?
Well, obviously there's the other 50%.
Well, yeah, okay.
And they're not complaining, right? So they seem to be doing
okay. So how do you know until you try it, I guess, like anything else in life?
Well, they're expensive. And the insurance is only going to cover it once in your lifetime. So, unfortunately, this is what they're taught to do in dental school. And they don't know how to evaluate it. They're not taught how to evaluate it.
Wow. All right.
Sad, I know.
It is. It is rather sad.
But it's a complex subject matter, as we've been discovering.
Yeah, and that's why, look, we're only scratching the surface here. I got to wrap things up here, but this is so fascinating. I can't wait for next week. Folks, you have been listening to The Sleep Show with Dr. Bethany Brennan. A couple of points of contact here for you. I always start with the website, and I know this website is chock full of information, so maybe you should go there. Of course, it may answer your question, but it may also spark new questions. TheBurlingtonDentist.com. TheBurlingtonDentist.com. And now would be the time to make that phone call, 860-673-7155. I'll say it again. I'll say it a little more slowly. Write it down. More importantly, call it. Do you have a sleep disorder? Do you know? Maybe you just think. Are you not sure? How about your child, your grandchild? Here's that phone number once again, 860-673-7155. For Dr. Bethany Brenner, I'm Gary Byron. Thank you so much for listening to The Sleep Show. Until next Saturday morning, have a good one, everybody. So long.